Today's episode of Fantasy Fiction is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/fantasyfiction. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Kindle, MP3 player, or Magic Stone. Today we're recommending The Eye of the World, Book 1 of The Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan. It's a 30-hour book, people. Think of the value. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/fantasyfiction for your free audiobook download. And if they ask, tell them Snickerdoodle sent you. Reese's can suck it.
In the land of fantasy, on the fields of fiction, there rode two knights across the plains. Two thieves of the night, two warriors of honor, in the shadow of the mountain cry their name.
Until the deed is done.
Fantasy Fiction.
Until the quest is won.
Fantasy Fiction.
The battle's in our minds.
Fantasy Fiction.
Until the end of time.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Fantasy Fiction. My name is Dominic.
My name is Josh.
Hey, I'm Aubrey.
Oh, it's Aubrey Sitterson.
Ow!
From the Straight Shoot.
What's happening, boys?
Wrestling talk show. And in it, you know what, guys? This is Fantasy Fiction. Mm-hmm. We talk all things fantasy and fiction. My man Aubrey's got another podcast that he does on his own. He does the Scald Podcast.
The Scald Podcast, my man. It's an ongoing sword and sorcery serial. So it's not high fantasy. It's not like a Lord of the Rings kind of like big earth-shattering things. It's low fantasy. It's gritty. It's a big barbarian guy murdering people, and it's grim. It's dark and kind of really mean-spirited and hateful and aggressive.
I like it already.
It's super easy to find. You just search for Scald in iTunes or Stitcher or what have you, or scald.podomatic.com if you want the streaming web version.
And that's
S-K-A-L-D.
That's Scald. It. Now, before we get into the high fantasy, the low fantasy, any old fantasy is fine on this show.
Any fantasy goes.
Our prompts this week are Dungeon Masters, as suggested by Ein Bogey. That's how I'm going to guess that that's how it's said. And
that sounds made up to me. Yeah.
And Wrestling by Mirtayatana.
These are real names? Or is
these are YouTube names. These are their names from YouTube. Guys, when you submit your prompt, you go ahead and put your name up for mispronunciation.
Yeah, phonetically spell it, please.
Oh, okay. Before we get into the tales of fantasy here, Josh, what did you do this week, man?
I didn't do anything. I went away and I just sat in a room and I didn't do anything and it was fucking awesome.
You didn't do. You had a nice hangout.
A little vacation. With someone. It was great. It was a really fun time. I loved not being around where I live. That was the best part.
Mm-hmm. Wait, where were you?
I was in Connecticut.
Where are you now?
I'm in Pennsylvania. Philadelphia.
Do you know you're in Philadelphia? You just gave us three answers, man.
I'm in Bucks County. That's where I'm at.
What is that? What is Bucks County?
That's where I grew up. Oh, okay. And
only
Josh,
the best county.
Is a suburb.
It is a suburb of Philadelphia, yes. So you didn't watch anything while you were hanging out, Josh?
No.
You watch up that Pope? You checking in on the Pope?
I saw some Pope back home. He looked like he was doing some Pope things. That's pretty fantasy, watching the Pope do that stuff. Pretty cool.
Yeah, watching the Magic Man come.
He's got lots of like awesome fantasy outfits that he wears.
Dude, that fucking hat. Also, that guy, like, his bless has, like, a really wide, like, it's a cone. I thought, like, a pope had to bless, like, an individual person. It's a cone.
It's an AOE. It's a wide area of effect.
Yeah, it's area of effect spell.
Is this, like,
This is
canon. Earth canon.
This is Catholic canon.
Yeah, man. And that's how he does it too. There's a cannon that it's a confetti cannon, and he shoots it out. And anybody who gets hit by the confetti is blessed.
Is that why everybody goes crazy for him? They're like, oh, I got to get in that radius.
At the mass, if you go to the mass, he blesses everybody like within I don't know whatever radius.
Oh,
the blast.
Man.
The
I was saying
radius.
That he should do it like Gallagher and bless a watermelon and then just hit the watermelon.
Oh man, I may have gave that one of the sweet RT endorsements. Did you tweet that this week?
I did tweet it.
I might have retweeted that this
I
week.
I did tweet that.
That sounds really familiar to me.
I'm recycling Joe.
Hey, if it's the Pope, guys, we need to hear them. We need to hear those Pope jokes.
Hear those Pope jokes.
Right. I didn't laugh because that's serious.
No, yeah, no. This is like a real thing. Aubrey, what did you do this week, man?
Oh, man. All kinds of things, really. But I watched a lot of wrestling, as per usual, but this week I was excited because there was a New Japan Pro Wrestling like dual pay-per-view that we talked about on my Straight Shoot show, and it's Destruction, and it was two nights of it. There was one earlier this week, it was in Okayama, and then there was one actually last night that was in Kobe, and so I actually got up this morning. It's kind of my favorite thing to do now, is get up first thing on a Sunday morning with some cereal, kind of hungover, and watch the night before's Japanese
wrestling. That actually sounds awesome. Like,
it's wicked fun. Yeah,
that's
like,
super cool.
None of it's translated. It's all in Japanese.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Yeah, like it's a much more like sport based presentation than like WWE. So it's not like all about like promos and packages and stuff. It's just these guys fighting and telling a story through their fighting. It's amazing. It's
they're like warrior thing. Poets, and they died
yeah,
like
great.
Warrior poets.
Did you say this was another tournament that they were doing?
No,
or?
This is not a tournament.
This was just a double feature.
The most recent tournament they did was the G1, and that was like, and I'm the worst. I fell off like halfway through just because it's the G. Josh.
Yeah.
Josh, the G1 is 20 guys in two different blocks, and it's a round robin tournament, and it goes on for like a fucking month. Of everybody wrestling everybody. It's
That's
too much
crazy.
To keep up with. This is just a regular pay-per-view.
Did
they split into two.
Did the King of Strong Style win, though? Who's that guy?
Oh, that's Shinsuke Nakamura. Yeah, I watched... He was in the main event of the thing that I watched this morning, and he actually won back the IWGP Intercontinental title from Hirooki Goto. And it was the best match of both events.
That dude, I haven't seen that dude wrestle, but I've seen plenty of pictures of that guy. Like him a lot.
He's really good, man. He's really, really good. He's actually a phenomenal wrestler. Like, he's like wrestling Michael Jackson. Which is to say, he's like really like flashy, but he's also the best. He's also just the best, indisputably.
You know who's real flashy that I like right now? Guys, sidebar wrestling talk, Dalton Castle. Mm-hmm.
Oh, Dalton Castle's the best.
He's got guys.
Dalton Castle came on my show and he didn't. So I do a post Raw wrestling talk show and he didn't watch the Raw that we were supposed to talk about and it didn't even matter because he was just so ridiculous and great. And he came live and he was sitting there with a glass of wine and then behind him a giant portrait of himself.
That's
I tuned in to that one. Ridiculous. Pretty great episode though. If you are listening to this on YouTube, guys, pause it, put in Dalton Castle entrance, check out this dude's entrance. It's awesome. It's so
it brings his boys with him.
It brings some hunky boys along with him.
Oh, he's the peacock of professional wrestling. That's what he called
himself. He's got an awesome cape too. I guess you could call it a cape.
Yeah, it's a cape. It's like a peacock thing.
Yeah, it's pretty dope.
Dude, anyone with a cape.
He's got legit wrestling bona fides. That guy was on the Greco-Roman U.S. national team.
Oh, wow.
That's the thing. It's like he's got this like really goofball pretty boy gimmick, but then he gets in the ring and he does like legit Greco-Roman shit, and it's awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah, he's a great wrestler. I got to see him on that Ring of Honor I think we watched together.
Yeah.
But tell you what I did this week, guys.
What?
Got my first massage.
Right?
That's
right?
Like wrestling with soreness.
It was wrestling with soreness. I went to we celebrated my birthday 2 days before. We went up to the Sherman Oaks Castle to play mini golf. Don't go there for mini golf.
It's not really good.
Really, really bad. It's next to a highway.
Okay.
And cars are flying by towards the, if you choose the one course.
I bet it smells real nice, too.
It smells awful. none of the stuff is worked on. Like, everything's out of order. It's pretty bad. Don't go there, guys. It's a pretty bad place. But they have batting cages, and they're
Wait,
cool.
Wait, so you got a massage at the
mini golf?
I got sore. I got sore from the batting cages. From mini golf. If I got sore from mini golf, that'd be
what
pretty
a mini
bad.
Golf game.
But I got sore from doing the batting cages.
Oh, okay.
I got
dude,
real gentle hands. I don't know if you guys know this, but I work on a computer all day on the internet.
Yeah,
I've noticed your gentle hands.
So
before.
I got some very real soft hands, you know, and I got real sore. Got all types of sore swinging that bat around, hitting dingers. You know what I'm saying?
Is that a good thing to hit a dinger?
Hit a dinger? Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Hitting dingers.
Oh yeah,
that's a home run, I think.
Oh, I have no idea.
But I got a massage yesterday.
Cool.
My first
what kind of massage
ever.
Was it?
It was a Swedish massage.
Nice.
And the woman was an older woman named Marcy, and she said, "Is this your first time?" And I said, "Yes." She said, "I've been doing massages for over 30 years," and I was like, "That's crazy! I just turned 30." So, like, I was born, became an adult, got all sored up, and then she rubbed me down. That's how long
she started doing it, because she knew 30 years later you're going to be all sored up.
She was like, there's going to be a young boy with soft hands who's going to need some attention.
A computer boy's coming in.
A regular computer boy.
You dig it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I was really, really relaxed.
Was it hard enough for you?
Yeah, it wasn't too intense. A lot of thumb and elbow action, forearm. She did the thing where she punched my feet.
Oh, yeah. That's
good. I really enjoyed that. Yeah. It felt real great.
I do not enjoy a massage, personally. I don't like being touched, like, roughly.
I like a massage.
Like that.
I like a massage, but I like to be really aggressive.
Wow.
And here's the thing. Like, I like it when a dude massages me.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. Generally, they weigh more, they have more pressure, they can lean on you, and they've got more muscle mass, and they can really go to town on you. Yeah, I like them to beat the shit out of me.
When you get massaged,
yeah,
do you get a sweat?
I want it to kind of hurt, yeah.
Is Swedish the type you get?
I get a deep tissue.
Oh, you go deep tish.
Yeah.
Deep tish.
the D-tish, really. Is what it is.
The deep tish pizza.
Yeah, man. Yeah, Chicago style massage.
Yeah,
what I like to get. I like it. The more aggressive, the better, man. I want them to really fight. Because otherwise, I just feel like it's just somebody fucking rubbing me, which I guess is fine.
It's kind of
nice. I can
do
that myself.
Yeah.
Do you think you
could rub your own back like that?
Yeah, look at all this I can get.
Checks out. Checks out.
Pretty flexible, man.
But what do you guys say? We got wrestling and dungeon masters as our prompts this week.
Oh, I'm so stoked.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We have I would say an expert in wrestling.
I would also say that.
I would say we have an expert fan in 80s and 90s wrestling, Josh Henderson.
Yes.
I think we're going to have some fun here.
Hey, I'm dungeon mastering a Dungeons & Dragons game. Fucking 3 days
from
now.
Oh my god.
Really?
Well, this will get you ready for it.
Is this your first time DMing?
No, I mean, I've DMed before, but it's always been with, like, kind of pre-made modules.
Okay.
This Wednesday, I'm DMing for the first time completely homebrewed fucking bullshit
nice.
That I've made up.
Oh, man.
I've prepared, I think, way too much, way too difficult of stuff for my guys. But that's fine.
That's kind of the nature of it. They have to work as a team to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hopefully.
That's what it's all about. Is usually you're going to die.
Fuck them. That's on them. That's not on me.
What do you say we get into this? Why don't we start with my man, Josh Klenderson?
Ready. Gentlemen, this week, episode 71, my story's name is Death Eagle 4, The Prequel Years.
Dope.
The Prequel Years.
I like that we're starting at the beginning.
I like that this is like a season. Like, we're getting a whole season of this.
It's like the Wonder Years.
The Prequel Years of the Wonder Years.
The Prequel Years.
The not-so-wonderful years. Okay.
All right. Ready. Daranos is covered with dungeons. You can't put your dick in a hole without stubbing it on some kind of spooky dungeon or haunted crypt, or maybe just a stash of dub-dub some crunk skeleton is hiding so he can come back later and smoke himself back to life. The high life. But not all dungeons are as popular with adventurers as others. Some have been forgotten through the ages, left to rot, while the monsters inside of them are left only with one thought. Was it something I did? Maybe I should have just let him finger me. God, why am I such a prude?
Jesus.
I'm gonna call him. No. I'm going to text him my dick, then call him.
Whoa.
I don't know. Keep going. No, don't listen to the dog. Just keep going.
Don't listen to the dog. Keep going. One such dungeon was the Death Eagle Catacombs, an ancient and long-forgotten tomb brimming up to its cervix with loot, but unpopular with local adventurers ever since the new super dungeon opened up down the street named Wall Dungeon.
Boo.
Oh, I know Boo. That.
Don't shop at Wall Dungeon.
Bigness is the problem, man.
Capitalism, boo. All right, minions, shouted Death Eagle, an orc shaman in charge of all the monsters in the dungeon. Death Eagle wore the wings of a griffin he supposedly won in a poker game. He was the dungeon master and controlled everything from respawn rate to mob difficulty to your jizzin' dick. We need to put this place back on the map. I need some ideas, so that's why I've called this brainstorming sesh. All around were skelemen, gelatinous cubes, mimics, ghosts with swords, living statues with fully anatomically correct peeners, and one weed-smoke-breathing dragon who, instead of breathing fire out of his mouth, only blew out the purest dank fumes like some sort of magical secondhand dankzilla.
A secondhand...
Secondhand Dankzilla.
That's my next tet. Dankzilla. I'm not gonna bring in reference to the artist. I'm just gonna say, listen, just Dankzilla.
Dankzilla.
Figure it out.
Figure it out.
I'm gonna get Son of Dankzilla. Yeah.
Mecha Dankzilla.
Is that a vape?
It's a vape. He's a vape.
It's just a vape transformer.
Mothra is just always Mothra.
Yeah,
Mothra's always
eternal.
Mothra.
Yeah. Changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no point changing that. I think we should have a sock hop, said one skeleton who died when sock hops were still a thing people did. I think we should have a book fair, said a gelatinous cube who was also the dungeon's librarian, which just meant he was trapped in the library and in charge of killing anyone who came into it. I think we should have a carnival, said another skeleton who was really into face painting for some weird reason. We'll invite all the kids and have a petting zoo full of gelatinous cubes and have goat men and a dunk tank full of acid. And when the kids are all having a great time, we kill their parents, thus ensuring that the kids will want to enact their revenge upon us. We'll be in business for years. Hey, it worked for Big Tobacco. He said as the whole room got quiet and someone awkwardly coughed in the back. We'll put that one in the maybe pile, replied Death Eagle. We need something that'll really make this place scream, man, I gotta get my dick up in that loot. Backyard wrestling match, said Dankzilla.
Yeah.
The entire room got quiet again. Suddenly, one skeleton started to clap slowly. Then another. Then a gelatinous cube started jerking himself off. Then two skeletons started to make out teeth to teeth. Pretty soon, the whole room was raucously applauding and just fucking anything they could.
Yeah.
That was the best idea anyone in this dungeon has ever had, said Death Eagle as he slowly started disrobing. Let's finish this impromptu orgy, and then we'll put our greatest backyard wrestling match anyone has ever seen. We'll charge 5 silver to get in, and we'll finally put this place back on the map. Literally, we'll make maps that point out where the treasure is, and adventurers can just follow it, and we'll be back in business. He finished as the whole room cheered, and some people were already done jizzing.
I want to point out about the skeleton,
yeah,
who was obsessed with face painting.
Mm-hmm.
So he lost his face.
Yeah. He's probably
now,
sad about that.
I think he's got an obsession about it.
Yeah, he's probably like it makes him really sad to do it, but like, you
it's
know.
Like he could paint a human face on his skull.
He's not that good yet.
Hey Josh, how does a gelatinous cube jerk off?
I mean, I don't know, like any way, right?
Any
like,
way they goddamn please. That's the
yeah.
Answer,
you could
huh?
just jerk off any old like phallus you make up for yourself.
Living the dream, man.
I want to be that. That's what I want to be. Soon, everyone had jizzed their fill, and the minions set up a homemade squared circle in the dungeon's graveyard. The minions themselves lined up in the stands, as well as a few diehard backyard wrestling fanatics that filled both Theranos and Orcspire, because that's canon. Literally tens of amateur adventurers showed up and paid their silver to participate in this hastily thrown together, extremely unsafe, and very unethical, unsupervised wrestling tournament. Sloppy Joe, the orc cook, turned midlife crisis adventurer, showed up as his alter ego, the cook crook. Famous high elf flyer, Eldrin, the elf boy Mankiewicz, was there, dressed in full lucha gear with all kinds of sequins and enough pomp for any circumstance. But everyone had their eye on Brunkilda, the dwarf female berserker who, legend has it, once suplexed an entire family of five straight into hell after super kicking their family dog into space, all because she was more of a cat person.
So she just attacked an entire family.
Dude, berserkers,
and
man.
Murdered them.
Berserkers.
And their dog.
You can't hold them back. You try to tell them. The first match of the evening will be Larry, the hug-fighting skeleton, against the cook crook, said Death Eagle as he spoke into the microphone that was hanging from the ceiling. Let's get ready to fight each other, he said, which was his signature catchphrase.
Classic. You don't think of backyard wrestling in Daranos without hearing
that. That's everywhere. The bell rang, and immediately Larry the hug-fighting skeleton reached out with his signature move and started hugging the cook crook. This went on for several minutes because the cook crook really needed a hug since his wife left him and sent him into a midlife tailspin that would make your dad's third divorce look like your dad's second divorce.
What if my dad hasn't had a second divorce?
Well, he hasn't had a hard enough midlife crisis then.
What's the worst divorce?
Yeah, which one's the worst?
Probably the first would be the worst, right?
You know what I think is the worst? The divorce you never have.
That's beautiful.
Think on that.
That should be a card.
That's
what is it commemorating, that card?
Dude, the greatest holiday of them all. Freedom from marriage.
Grim.
pretty grim.
Fart this, shouted Brunkilda from the side of the ring. Let's make this party rated PG-13 for Punch Guys, :13, where the 13 stands for how many times each guy is going to get punched to death. As she finished, she kicked the gravestone, breaking it off, and carried it into the ring, where she hit Larry the hugging Skeleman right in the spine. Ow! My bony-ass spine! He whined, and then died from crying too much. Brunkilda then punched the cook crook 13 times to death, just as she promised she would. As he lay there dying, he remembered all the good times he had with his estranged wife. A smile appeared on his face as he quietly said, We had some good times, didn't we, Sheila? And then he died happily, because they did have some good times. But mostly he died happy, because he was thinking about all the times she let him try anal. What if that was
the good times, or was that separate?
What if that was, like, the only, like when people die in movies and they, like, smile thinking back on things? What if they're just thinking about all the times they got to do, like, really cool sex things?
I think anytime somebody cries and smiles, those are the times that they're thinking about the sex stuff.
Yeah, because they're never going to have it again.
Anytime they cry and smile.
Anytime.
Oh, man. Eldrin the elf boy Mankiewicz was already atop the top turnbuckle, ready to perform the famed flying elf bow. As he sailed through the air, Brunkilda sensed his presence with her hairy ears and lifted her meaty leg up to intercept the deadly attack, hitting him squarely in the jaw and breaking out his diamond teeth. Yeah, he had diamond teeth, because he wasn't just an elf boy. He was a fancy boy. My kicks are an 11 on the Mohs hardness scale, Brunkilda said as she looked down at Eldrin's busted-ass teeth. So's my dick, Eldrin replied. I think I'm in love. Which was true. His boner was at a 12, and so was his respect for her.
They're doing feet stuff, right?
I think that has to be it, right?
Yeah, he was into that a little bit. Anyone with diamond teeth is into that shit.
Wait, did he cry and smile?
He cried and smiled and thought about all the times he got to like lick a foot or whatever weird people do.
All right, then we know.
I'm acting like I don't lick feet. Anyway. Death Eagle, she boomed as she started doing curls with the dead. I want you. Suddenly a spotlight shot across the stage to the entrance as a sick guitar riff boomed, playing Death Eagle's theme song, which went something like this. Death Eagle is the night. Death Eagle gonna fight you all night. Death Eagle is a knight with a K. Fight night, death night, night fight. All right. As Death Eagle came out, awesome dank smoke was blowing all around from Dankzilla as Death Eagle's robes were looking super cool and glistening with all the loot from the dungeon's coffers. When he entered the ring, he dropped his robes with a thud as all kinds of coins and candlesticks spilled out. Slowly, the microbone lowered from the ceiling as Death Eagle grabbed it. Broodkilda, he shouted. You have demonstrated your wrestling prowess, and all I have to say is, you're hired. Everyone began to cheer as Death Eagle pulled out a contract, which would make him Broodkilda's manager and partner. You want me to team up with you? She said, confused, as sweat dripped down her beard because I just made up that she had one. Death Eagle's hand remained extended in an effort to seal the deal. You're a brutal dwarf berserker, and I'm an orc shaman who controls people for a living. Let's put our differences aside and our powers together, and together we can rule all the dungeons in Daranos. Broodkilda thought for a hard second as a skeleton in the crowd shouted, "Don't do it!" because she was clearly the good guy. I'll do it, she said as she clasped his hand and they shook on it. The crowd went wild. But suddenly, as she turned around, Broodkilda let loose the most epic chin music ever seen. The shockwave could be heard around Daranos as the kick landed right on Death Eagle's face. As he reeled backwards, he crashed through a decorative golden mirror that had fallen out of his robe with the rest of the treasure and cut him up something awful like, no, oh God, no! The crowd shouted. I lied, Broodkilda said brutally. The crowd went full-blown crazy as two skeletons started making out teeth to teeth. Broodkilda picked up the loot-filled robe and walked off into the moonset, never to be seen again. Finn, post-credit scene. Wait, why was there a mirror just in the ring for no reason? Asked the skeleton wearing a newly purchased Broodkilda rippable tank top and matching trucker hat. I don't know, man, said another one wearing a Rip Cook Crook Memorial shirt. I don't even remember why we needed to have this wrestling match. I think it was for charity or something. Autism? I don't know, man. Want to kiss some more? Double Finn.
Great job, man.
Josh, you had me going, man. I thought this was going to be the only wrestling contract signing end well in the history of the genre, and then you turned it around, man.
That's right.
I was shocked. I was floored.
If nothing voids the contract more than a super kick to the chin, I don't know what else would.
Listen, in all my years as a lawyer, that's right, a lawyer,
a lawyer.
There's nothing that'll void a contract faster than a sweet, sweet, sweet chin music.
That's fucking legal canon right there.
So he started this tournament.
Yeah.
To get some money,
mm-hmm.
but then also had the know-how to lock somebody down.
He was a savvy businessman. When opportunity strikes, you got to sign a contract with it. That's what they say.
He should have had the know-how to do some sweet, sweet chin music reversals.
Yeah,
but he didn't know.
The more applicable know-how.
What's one? What's a way someone can reversal out of some sweet chin?
Dude, the dopest is Kurt Angle. Like, one of my favorite wrestling matches is Shawn Michaels versus Kurt Angle, mm-hmm. and Kurt Angle catches it and then goes right into the ankle lock.
Oh, nice.
Oh, man.
That's awesome.
It's the business.
Yeah. Well, now you guys know, if you're ever about to sign a contract and somebody tries to give you some sweet chin music,
ankle lock.
Ankle lock.
Just
ankle
grab it. Just
and
stop
you can
it.
Grapevine it if you want a little bit of extra leverage. All right, boys, you ready to have your timbers shivered?
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah.
Fuck yeah.
I haven't had one of those in a while.
Fuck it, this one's all for free, man. It's on me. Hundreds of years ago.
Whoa, hold on. So this story, does this story have a title?
No.
Okay.
If you guys, listen, I can't be troubled with such things as titling stories.
Wow.
So I'm going to tell the story to you right now. And if you feel so inclined, the two of you can, your this brain trust can put together the appropriate title for this tale.
At the end of the story.
If your timbers aren't too shivered.
Okay. Oh, whoa.
And that's my challenge to you. Hundreds of years ago, Air Derinos' rise to prominence, and long before Battle Keg's ill-fated experimentation with elven metalcore,
the
ancient,
that.
Totally badass civilization of Megatool towered yes. above the waves, the very waves that would welcome that once great land in to the ocean depths due to the prophet Brosif's failure to keep his shit together.
That'll do it. Now,
see episode 32
thank
for more
you.
Details.
Oh my God.
But that fortuitous day was still far, far in the future as the dungeon master laid upon the ground, exhausted and broken, thinking not about the death that now seemed inevitable, unavoidable, but thinking only about his dream. His true dream, oh and how far he was from ever truly achieving it.
Whoa.
And do you know what his name was, Dom?
I don't know what his name was.
Give it
was.
A guess.
It's Jeff?
No, that's not it. Try again.
Joe.
How about Joe?
That's right. His name was Joe.
Yes.
Joe had lived his entire life in Megatool, pronounced with a slightly aspirated T sound, which is why there's an H after it. It's a little difficult for American English speakers to say, but yeah. It's an important distinction, because without it, you're saying Megatool, which is what Joe used to maintain and upkeep his dungeon. It was basically a Leatherman, but with a couple of the knives swapped out for a bowl and a magic wand.
Oh, ho, ho.
Deep beneath Megatool's capital city of Poundtown, Joe
yes.
lived, using his Megatool to administer, guard, manage, and protect the underground factories that made the utter badassery of Megatool possible.
Whoa.
And a big part of that was, of course, keeping the slaves in line.
Of course.
Now, before you start to judge Joe, you have to understand.
Yeah.
He didn't like being a slave master overseer.
Oh, I'm
it
sure.
It sucked. Even putting aside all the sticky moral and ethical considerations, it was miserable. The hours blew, there was like no natural light in any of the dungeons, and you don't even understand how bad it is trying to manage a large staff, all of whom were chained to giant rocks, which were in turn chained to even gianter rocks, a double redundancy that those fat cats from Poundtown had insisted upon, not giving a turkey's fart how it affected productivity.
That's
but did
true.
They lower the quotas? What do you think?
No, they
no.
didn't.
No,
they never
no,
do.
No, they didn't. After all,
typical.
The sweat and tears of Joe's slaves was the fuel that drove Megatool.
Sounds like
literally.
Joe's the slave.
It was literally fuel for Megatool residents who would take tiny shots of slave sweat and tears to reinvigorate themselves after spirited bouts of getting laid and or getting paid.
I don't know if I'm as down with Megatool as I used to be now.
Now that you scratch the surface, it's yeah. I don't know. It's a morally comp. All of my tales are morally complex, Dom.
Shit,
well,
this is
like
more,
me.
This is more morally complex than Game of Thrones. That's all I'm gonna say.
You wait for it, man.
This is a lot like The Matrix.
The second one is going to be the best one. I went there. He didn't like being a slave master, but growing up, he didn't have a lot of options. He was from Poundtown, sure, but they weren't the gleaming streets that you see on television. No way. Joe grew up in Poundtown's roughest neighborhood, known simply as Fuck You.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Though there weren't a lot of opportunities for kids growing up in Fuck You. Boy, were there some characters. Joe could talk your ear off about them. In fact, it was the subject of his one-man show, Fuck You, People. It was a working title.
That's brilliant. No, that's brilliant.
Trouble was, when Joe wasn't finding new and innovative ways to make his slaves sweat and cry, he was struggling to defend the dungeon from roving bands of adventurers.
Oh.
How was that even a job. Adventurer, running around murdering people and shoving your noses in other folks' problems. Yeah. That can fuck you. They had another word for people like that. Assholes. Growing up, Joe didn't even know that being an adventurer was an option. His guidance counselor sure as shit didn't tell him anything about that.
Fuck, dude.
And that's actually a big part of fuck you people's side-splitting first act.
Side-splitting.
Of course, it seemed like no one would ever get to even experience it at this rate. Joe wasted so much time coming up with clever traps, convincing goblins to stay hidden instead of wandering around yammering at each other, painting ominous sigils on the walls. And man, have you ever worked with a beholder? That's not a rhetorical question, Josh.
I've worked with a few.
It sucks.
Yeah,
it sucks.
Yeah.
They are always asking you to cut out early, usually something with their fucking kids. And when you say no, they just hover there, eyeballing you.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Dude, I love this.
He'd had enough. He'd had more than enough. If he kept dealing with all these fucking pricks, he'd never even have a chance to finish his one-man show, much less workshopping. He was proud of the work he'd done. Don't get him wrong. But he couldn't lie to himself. He knew he was going to need to do some heavy, heavy editing. And of course, if you've ever done live theater, you know that there's just no telling how a live audience is going to respond.
You gotta do it to know, yeah.
There was serious, serious work to be done. So Joe got to work. Serious, serious work. If he was going to find time to finish the, fingers crossed, future award-winning, fuck you, people, he would need to put a stop to the constant barrage of adventurers that plagued his dungeons in search of treasure, magical items, and that sweet, sweet XP. To that end, he began training in the one true sport, in the ancient, glorious art of wrestling.
Damn.
The lichen-covered caves of his dungeon Ooh. Became his gym. The withered slaves became his free weights. By candlelight, he studied ancient manuals of long-forgotten wrestling techniques and holds. He called forth every monster that possessed more than two arms, Whoa. And he made them his sparring partners.
Damn.
He read and practiced techniques all night, and then he rolled on the mats all day. Cauliflower ear was a badge of honor.
This is beautiful.
Did he bench press withered slaves?
Yeah, those were his free weights. He didn't just bench, he would do lunges, you know, because you can't skip leg day, man.
Yeah.
He would do all of the exercise.
Just like a bundle of twigs under each other.
Yeah, he would do fucking farmer fucking walks with them. But there was no, I repeat, no patience for ringworm or herpes. Joe had wrestled in high school, and he had seen what happens when you don't keep the mats clean.
Yeah.
One kid at his school had to stay home for a week because he had herpes all over his face. It was fucking sick.
That's disgusting.
He did think, though, that there was probably a humorous angle he could take on it for fuck you, people. But there was no time to figure it out. That was the whole fucking point, Josh.
Anything can be material, man.
So he trained. He trained long, and he trained hard. And if you're into that kind of thing, no judgments. It was super, super sexy.
Oh, yeah.
Then, when he was ready, when he could reliably tie up a flarpkin. Dom, do you know what a flarpkin is?
It's like it's a mystical.
It's got eight arms.
Yeah.
Okay. A giant head. It lives mostly underwater. It can shift color and ink stuff.
Is this a real pull
like,
from?
Well, it's an octopus, but it's like really good at wrestling.
Oh, okay.
And Joe could beat one, not just by pinning it, but by grappling the ever-living fuck out of it
Hell
and
yeah.
making it tap out with one of its eight spindly little arms.
Oh.
Joe was yoked, and he was skilled. He had a game plan. And he wasn't just big and bulky, but like totally cut and vascular as well. Scary big, bro. I don't know if he was on steroids or not, but he was definitely on something. HGH, T therapy, something, I'm telling you. So he sent a message to the Adventurers League. How do they even afford that building? Are there dues or something? Some rich dead asshole set up a just in his will? Jesus!
He's so
the
mad.
One chance to beat him. One chance to get complete unfettered access to the dungeons. All they had to do was select a champion, a single warrior, and send them to meet Joe inside the squared circle.
Yes.
Damn. But if they lost, if the adventurer's champion was pinned or submitted by Joe, if the impartial referee raised Joe's hand in victory at the end of the match,
That's the good shit. If Joe is victorious, the Adventurers League would be forbidden from ever venturing inside the dungeon ever again. Yeah. Ever! Sure, Joe would still have his daily duties, and believe me, they took up a full day. At least a full day. But once he got home, once he had a minute, maybe a glass of scotch to unwind, a light dinner, then, finally, he could devote some real, serious time to getting fuck you people ready for a read. On the appointed day, a Tuesday, I believe, the adventurers arrived. Joe had commanded his slaves to clear out and clean up the dungeon's largest chamber, usually reserved for massive, multi-tiered battles that could only be properly explained and represented using a ragtag assortment of half-assedly cut-up shoeboxes and empty beer cans that kind of worked as towers. The slaves assembled not only a ring, but stadium seating as well. No easy task when you're tied to a rock tied to a boulder. One side was reserved for the adventurers, there to watch their champion compete, and the other was filled to the brim with assorted monsters, ghouls, demons, and extraplanar entities that had grown to not only respect, but actually love Joe after years of sometimes stressful but always considerate business dealing.
That's some Stockholm shit.
And he was pretty careful when he was curling the withers.
He was a good boss, man. I mean, like, here's the thing. He's middle management. What do you expect?
Yeah, middle management.
He does the best he can do.
At a certain point, the slaves got together. They were like, you know what? This isn't this guy's fault.
At a certain point, spoiler alert, the subtext of this story. Okay. At a certain point, we're all complicit in evil.
That's
every last one of us.
Absolutely true.
Since it was a special occasion, the slaves were allowed to sit on either their giant rock or their gianter rock. It was their choice. If I'm being entirely honest, they appreciate it.
Who would pick the smaller one?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it was difficult to climb up on it because, like, depending on how the chains are, you might have to drag the smaller one up on top of
the larger one. They might be emaciated, yeah.
And you got to consider how withered you are.
Yeah.
Pretty fucking withered is the answer to that.
Yeah.
Anyway, the adventurers brought forth their champion, a massive 7-foot-tall, stone-skinned, half-giant barbarian.
Whoa.
Whoa.
And Josh.
Yeah.
Do you know what his name was?
George.
No. Try again.
Steven.
Yes! His name was Steven. And as he removed his studded leather armor and flexed his massive muscles, clearly boasting a strength score of at least 20, making clear use of the resulting modifier, Joe began to question the wisdom of his plan. Sure, he had seen half-giant adventurers before, but they were far from common. He felt prepared for a human, for a dwarf with their low center of gravity, or even for a massively powerful half-orc. But a half-giant? This half-giant with the gleaming Herculean frame that he was currently being oiled by a haughty dwarven cleric? This was something else entirely. But the die was cast. Joe had made a choice, a decision that would determine the course of his life from that day onward. Oh, if he were to win, he would finally have the time to pursue his dream. The dream that he had nurtured since boyhood in the Poundtown neighborhood of fuck you. But if he lost, No. It was too terrible to think about. He couldn't lose. He wouldn't lose. He would not lose. The impartial referee, brought in on short notice from a neighboring island, signaled for the bell to ring and the match to begin. The two circled one another slowly, with Joe trying to read Steven, trying to discern his strategy. Ridiculous. His tactics, his strengths, and his weaknesses. Joe watched the hulking half-giant Steven lumber around the ring, weighing his options, trying to determine the best way to fell his cyclopean foe.
Oh, man.
Steven. But all of Joe's hopes for a technical matchup went suddenly out the window as Steven rushed forward, howling in some forgotten tongue in a voice that sounded like the cleaving of stone.
Damn.
But Joe was too quick for Steven, sidestepping and bringing the barbarian down with a well-placed drop toe hold, bringing the big, stupid brute right down on his nescient face. The barbarian roared in his fury and struggled against his opponent, but it was no use. Joe didn't boast the strength of the barbarian, but his training
had not been in vain. And as soon as Steven hit the mat, the dungeon master was on top of him.
Whoa.
Joe placed the barbarian's ankle between his thighs. Placed Steven's ankle between his thighs. Laid on top of him. On top of Steven. Locked his hands around Steven's face. And then pulled back. It was a step over, toe hold, face lock.
Oh.
An STF. Sure, these days it's mostly known because of John Cena. But it is a legit hold. Mm-hmm. Luthez made it up for crying out loud. Luthez! And that guy was not fucking around. But do you know who else wasn't fucking around?
Steven.
That was to Dom, Josh.
Oh.
Dom, do you know who else wasn't fucking around?
Steven.
That's right. Steven was not fucking around either. And as he lay there, caught in a hold that made him experience pure agony, made him consider giving up, made him consider tapping out, consider yielding, surrendering, capitulating. As he lay there, something inside him began to bubble up. Something hateful and angry and mean. A dark primal force that gave the barbarian a strength far beyond his already impressive ability score. It was anger, fury, rage. Steven raged. Steven raged hard. His anger brought him strength and power, giving him advantage on all strength checks, including those for athletics, for which he also had a bonus proficiency. So when he went to break the hold, went to break that expertly applied STF, went to perform a task that by all rights should have been impossible, unthinkable, when he grasped Joe's hands, flexed those heavily oiled muscles, and pulled, he succeeded. In a single motion, Steven not only broke the hold, but flung Joe off of him. The dungeon master left the ground briefly before colliding into the referee, who had been crouched nearby, ready to adjudicate a possible submission. Should the referee have been so close? No. Should he have been able to get out of the way quick enough? You're goddamn right he should have. But all of the more experienced referees were working a big 3-day tournament on the mainland, and Joe had, foolishly, in hindsight, gotten flyers printed up before lining up the ring official. And this was the best guy he could get on such short notice. Trouble is, this guy sucked eggs. He blew boats. Not only was he totally in the way, but when Joe collided with him, somehow, even though Joe was positive they didn't even touch the guy's head, the referee was knocked totally, completely unconscious.
Man.
Out like a fucking light.
The fix
is nuts.
In.
Nuts, I tell you. Nuts.
I like that he had to promote the event as well.
He got to get flyers, man. It's a big deal. Like,
yeah,
it's a big fucking deal. Joe did his best to rouse the referee from his unconscious state. If the match was to end, if Joe was to claim his victory, the referee must declare him the winner. And to do it, he must be awake. Joe shook the referee. He shouted, slapped, and pinched. But to no avail. Though the referee was out, the bell had yet to ring, which meant that the fight was still on, a fact that Joe realized when he felt a sharp kick in his side, knocking him to the ground. Joe looked up just in time to see Steven, that brutal, massively strong barbarian, catch his great axe, flung to him by the dwarven cleric who had accompanied him to ringside.
Oh, no.
The weapon was massive, requiring two hands to wield it, dealing an absurd D12 worth of damage, plus not only the barbarian's significant strength modifier, but also an extra 2 points of damage due to the fact that he was currently raging.
Mm-hmm.
In the words of the bard, Joe was fucked. He laid upon the ground, staring up as Steven approached him. With the referee still unconscious, there was nothing to stop the barbarian from splitting him right down the middle and watering the dungeon floor with his blood, gore, and viscera, from turning that makeshift wrestling arena into a charnel house, a sickening abattoir that contained naught but death and destruction. Joe thought about what could have been, what should have been. He should have brought laughter to untold millions, brought joy and hope to the young residents, so fuck you. He should have been the voice of his generation. No, he was
the voice of his generation. He had worked too long, too hard to see his dreams cast aside like an emaciated slave who could no longer drag his two giant rocks.
Damn.
He would not stand for it. So he stood, and he began to speak.
So he stood.
Whew, boy. You guys think this is rough? You wouldn't believe the neighborhood I grew up in.
Oh, no. He's doing his
gesture at the barbarian's weapon. Hey, nice axe. My dad used to shave with the larger model.
Oh!
The victory is within the barbarian Steven's grasp, though it was close enough for him to reach out and take it. Something about Joe's words. They spoke to him. Though Steven didn't grow up in fuck you, he was born in a neighborhood almost as rough. The borough known as Eat a Dick.
That's like Bucks County.
Yeah. In spite of himself, Steven began to chuckle, lowering his axe as Joe kept speaking. Seriously, though. I knew some real characters growing up in my neighborhood. Hey, Joe, nice outfit. Why don't you come over here and give us a kiss? My mother was gruff, but she meant well.
It was his mom.
That was his mom's voice. That's what she sounded like. The barbarian tried to fight it. He tried his damnedest to fight the urge. He refused to give in. But in the end, all of his strength, of his power, his considerable constitution score, even his rage, it all came to naught. As Steven realized that the tales spoken by Joe, that they were true. And what's more, they were funny because they were true. Joe's stories, while humorously told, contained a pathos, a suffering, a longing, a universal truth that made them simultaneously more touching, as well as funnier.
Yeah.
The barbarian let out another shockingly loud noise, but this time, it wasn't a roar. No. It was a guffaw. It was laughter, a rough, unhewn cackle that reverberated throughout the dungeon. Joe's still unfinished one-man show elicited a noise so loud, so raucous, so riotous a din that it even pulled that terrible-ass referee from his slumbers. A fact that did not go by unnoticed by Joe.
Oh, no.
Leaping into action, with Steven bent over at the waist, hands on his knees, overcome with laughter, Joe ran and made a diving leap over the barbarian Steven's back, flipping in the air, grabbing Steven's legs, then using his momentum to drive his opponent, Steven, his shoulder blades, down into the mat. Dom, do you realize what this is?
He's pinned.
It was a sunset flip. Yes, kind of. The referee slid into position. One, two, three. The match was won. Victory belonged to Joe. Not only would he be allowed to continue abusing his army of slaves mercilessly, working them to literal death in an effort to bottle their sweat and tears,
the good guys
but more
win.
Importantly, he would now have the time to pursue his dreams, to finish work on his one-man show. Fuck you, people. But now? Now was a time for celebration as the assembled monsters, fiends, and demons, and even the slaves circled around Joe and hoisted him up into the air, cheering his name. And as he was carried through the dungeons on their shoulders, he reached into his pocket and pulled out a spliff.
Yes!
But not just any spliff. This spliff was rolled with that diggity dank dank dizank Doobie Brothers only talk about China grow. China grow. Diggity dank dank dong danky dong dank. You know what the fuck I'm talking about, don't you?
It's canon.
Joe leaned back, a smile on his face, breathing in through the mouth and out through the nose. And to no one in particular, he whispered, "Legalize it."
That was amazing.
Holy shit. Oh,
I'm
man.
I'm drenched in sweat.
That's so good.
I am dripping sweat.
Dude.
Incredible.
Incredible.
Incredible tale.
Yeah. Amazing.
I'm speechless. There are no
Thanks
words.
Thanks for the help with the names, boys.
Hey, no problem. I thought we
I
were really good at
guessing. I could
have
thought a better name myself than Joe and Steven, the barbarian.
We wanted to make them relatable.
Yeah.
You know, in the style of the hit one-man show, fuck you, people.
Fuck you,
yeah, make people. It relatable.
Yeah, it really worked its way into the plot.
So what's the name of this story, boys?
Oh, my God. I think it's called Fuck You, People. That is Fuck You, People.
Is there a comma, or is that just the name?
Fuck You, People. The no prequel.
I love it. I really love it.
Josh and Aubrey, you guys ready for my tale of Dungeon Masters and wrestling?
I couldn't possibly be more ready.
I have a boner.
This tale is called Dungeon of the Bone King.
Yeah!
It was a pitch black fall evening in Orkspire. Everyone had already went to bed, except for one elf who didn't give a flip for the rules.
What a bad boy.
Yeah, she's bad. She didn't have time to sleep. No! She was busy infiltrating the dungeon of a lich on a quest to take something that wasn't hers.
Oh.
That's right. A thievery plot.
Stealing and not going to bed? What?
A mischief night, maybe. Yeah. Come to think of it, this was the first mischief night.
What? There are lots of people who do not call Mischief Night Mischief Night.
That's a Pennsylvania thing, right?
Yeah, so we call it Mischief Night. It's also called, like, Hell Night.
Yeah.
You should stop and explain to everybody what that is.
No, yeah, that's what we're doing right now.
Okay,
oh, right.
You'll find out. Just listen.
What did you call it growing up? It's the day before Halloween.
A lot of people
didn't
call it.
I called that, you know what we called it growing up? October 30th.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
You didn't have like.
So people
weren't awful pieces of shit in your area.
Well, no, they are, but they did it on Halloween.
Oh, they did it on Halloween. They were a-holes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the day before Halloween in some areas. I think in like the Midwest they call it Hell Night, but yeah, in PA they call it Mischief Night because that's when a mischief goes.
I guess
down.
That's good because like that way all the bad teenagers do their shit not the same time as the kids are trying to get their candy. Right?
Yeah, so like it's still a jerk thing, but it's like kind of a nice thing.
It's like, been
I guess it's like kind of thoughtful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this was the first one. She ventured through the labyrinth of Stink Lich the Bone King.
Damn.
He had ordered his servants to call him that, and they did because you just can't say no when the Bone King says so. That's an old skeleton saying, guys.
I love it.
Stink Lich, by the way, guys, some people may not know this. There's a character named Stinkline the Goblin. He would get beat up a lot. Nobody liked him. It was real funny when he got beat up, you know?
Go to the fantasy ficky.
Yeah, go to the fantasyficky.com. He turned into a lich along the way, and this is his dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
The elf's name was Lady Frickin' Saberblood.
Oh,
and
shit.
It was her 10th day inside the labyrinth. She was separated from her spirit companion and bear friend, Muscles Bear, mm-hmm. on day 2 when he tried to eat some honey wheat pretzels, accompanying with the robust flavor of a honey wheat ale under a box being held up by a stick. In her haste to help him out, she stepped on a trapdoor, slid right into a prison, where she befriended a tiny mouse named Jeremy, but his friends called him Jelly, who helped her escape Ocean's 2 style.
Ocean's 2.
Saberblood was now venturing deeper through the labyrinth's many halls. She peeked around the corner and saw the back of a skeleton guard. "No one coming this way," said the guard to himself. "Yep, I am damn good at this job." She crept up behind the guard and slit his throat.
Oh, Jesus.
Fuck. The skeleton dropped dead again. She pressed a loose brick into the wall as a secret door slid open. The elf went inside. Deeper into the labyrinth she ran. But for what reason, you thought? She came to a room filled with chests overflowing with treasure. She reached into her pocket and pulled out a little mouse named, you guessed it, Jelly.
Yeah!
The mouse ran to the corner of the room, pressed a loose pebble into the wall as another door slid open. Inside, there was what the elf was looking for. The black chest of Stinklich, the Bone King.
Shit.
Black chests are where liches keep their best stuff, from foil magic cards to framed pictures of athletes from the fair. If it's cool, it's in a lich's black chest.
That's wait, a very wide berth. That could be anything.
Were they athletes? Were they fair athletes, or were they just got the picture at the fair?
Well, they got the picture at the fair. So you remember you would win something at the fair, and it was like a framed mirror that said Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
So like that was maybe
or like
there.
A hemp necklace with like a glass bead with a little mushroom and
dude. Oh yeah,
dude, I got an Iron Maiden poster one time at a fair. It was awesome.
I got a pink and brown striped Baja at the fair.
What is that?
Like a you didn't know what Bajas were? It's like a hooded sweatshirt, but it's made of like this really rough like woven fabric.
Yeah.
Oh, like, okay. So it's like a
poncho. Poncho.
It's for like if you're homeless sweatshirt. And you need warmth.
Or you're just a shitty kid in the 90s. That's another good reason
who
to wear
was good
one.
At fair games.
Yeah, he did all right for himself at the Virginia State Fair.
Yeah.
In between pig person. Races.
Classic pig races. Yeah. Lady Saberblood picked the mouse back up and handed him what looked to be a twig, but was actually a very powerful wand. The mouse ran off, looked back for a moment, and bowed slightly toward the elf. Yes. He was collecting the 7 Moon Mouse artifacts of Master Swiss, but that is another tiny story for another tiny time. Lady Saberblood approached the black chest and knelt to examine it, but accidentally stepped on another button that opened up another
Jesus
hidden door,
Christ.
And a temple guard came out.
Oh, no. A temple guard!
Hey, girls aren't allowed in here, shouted the guard. Boys aren't either. This is strictly not the Bone King zone. The temple guard hit a button that opened up a bunch of doors, and goblin guards came out and seized her weapons and goods and cuffed her and escorted her to the alchemy of the lich.
Ow!
Stinklich the Bone King turned away from his crystal ball and looked the elf over as green drool dripped from his jaws. He was into her, although now that he was a lich, he had no true interest in pursuing women, mainly because his penis had passed away, but still he grossly looked at her. Send her to the arena, he gurgled as he turned back to his crystal sphere that looked like it was playing scrambled porn, but we can't be sure.
He's somehow worse than he was before, somehow.
Yeah, he's pretty, yeah, he somehow is worse. He's just like... He's now threatening, I guess, and that's why it's grosser.
Yeah.
The guards took Saberblood down to the arena, and she was cursing the whole way. Hard. At one point, the guards almost broke down and cried from the cursing because it was so fierce, but they dropped her at the entrance to the arena, and she sat there. Meanwhile, the crowd was waiting for the arena to begin. I heard she's tried to steal the Bone King's bone guitar, whispered one skeleton to another. I heard he tried to steal his girlfriend, whispered another skeleton who didn't know if the Stinklich had a girlfriend or not. He was just kind of throwing that out there as a guest to try
guessing,
to act like he knew, you know.
Yeah.
I heard he tried to steal the Bone King himself, and I'm bothered by that because that's my boss. That's my livelihood, said another skeleton who had a family to think about.
You don't fuck with a man's money.
No, man. No. Don Henley's Dirty Laundry began to play, and just as the organ kicked in, Lady Saberblood emerged from the purple curtain to a roar of booze. She got to the center of the ring and did a suck it motion, guys. Let's
I'm doing it right now.
"And her opponent," shouted the announcer who appeared out of nowhere. "The only orc bad enough to be called Fran and for it not to be an issue. Fran!" Fran, a very large orc, walked out from behind another curtain. He was a father of four and had some serious old man strength. He was carrying a couple trash bags because he was on his way to take out the trash when he got announced to the ring and had to appear. Stinklich watched from his skull-shaped balcony seats.
"Oh, man.
Fran says y'all gotta go to bed," yelled the orc as the crowd roared with excitement. Just then, Lady Saberblood baseball slide kicked Fran right in the fatherly face.
Oh my god.
This probably killed him. But she wasn't finished. Saberblood moonsaulted off the top rope onto Fran's dumbass life. The bell rang again and again as referees came out from the back to try to stop the assault. "No one tells me to go to bed," said Lady Saberblood as she continued to stomp his ass out. Refs tried to grab her, but then she beat them up too. "Wow," yelled a commentator. "I think she really killed that father of four." "Well, he was evil and his kids were evil too, so it's not that big of a deal."
"It's okay,"
added the color commentator. The crowd's boos slowly turned to cheers. They hated refs more than anything, and now she was kicking their asses, too. One orc ref tried to hold Saberblood back from Fran's lifeless body, but she wasn't having any of that. She hurricane-rotted the orc's face off. It flew at a man into the crowd who caught it and said, "Aw, sweet. Time to kiss this guy's dog." And he ran out of the arena.
What the fuck?
Stinklich was annoyed. He liked Fran and that referee. "Bring forth the beast," he yelled.
"Shit.
Beast, beast, beast," shouted the crowd. They were amped. Goblins dragged a cage out onto the arena floor and opened it and got the F out of there.
Holy shit.
Out of the cage appeared a bear wearing football pads with spikes on them
Oh,
and
no.
one of those party guy helmets with the beers and the straws.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
I love about life.
The elf couldn't believe her eyes.
That's Muscles Bear.
No.
She said. The bear roared. He wasn't listening. He had headphones in and they were pumping him hype jams, you know? So he was not paying attention. Muscles Bear was ready for a fight.
Understandable.
Muscles Bear sounds dope.
Yeah,
he's
pretty
got the Road
cool.
Warriors thing.
Yeah, he's got a Road Warriors thing. He's got the beer.
Helmet.
He's kind of...
What kind of hype... can you tell us what kind of hype jams he's listening? Because here's the thing. Right now, I'm having a hard time thinking of any jams more hype and Dirty Laundry. Yeah. Don Henley was in the Eagles, right?
Don Henley was in
the
Eagles.
The Eagles fucking suck, but Dirty Laundry is a dope song.
Dirty Laundry is a dope song. The cover to that album, I think it's called Can't Wait or I Can't Stand something, but it's him lighting matches in like an apartment at a kitchen table. With a clock in the background.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I love it. I think it's a great cover for an album. Look it up sometime.
I can't stand
still. So what's Muscles Bear listening to that's better than this?
That's listening to, like, DMX is X Gonna Give It To You is probably number one.
All right.
I mean, dope. Come on.
Suck my dick.
Ow, ow. Anything that barks. Any rap songs with barking.
So dope.
with tears in her eyes, she said, "Do you remember me, Muscles Bear?" And by the time she had finished that sentence, Muscles Bear had already stopped growling and was now licking her shoes for some
Aww.
Reason. He does that sometimes. He had recognized her a few minutes ago.
Good boy.
He was just putting on a show for the crowd, you know?
Yeah.
Stinklich threw his $8 Riff Light on the ground. Riff Light is a beer available at this arena. As the bear and elf shook hands, the crowd
man.
Cheered. They were into this pairing. "This singles competition is over," shouted the Bone King. "Commence the tag teams."
Yes.
Just as he said that, gates on the arena floor opened up with hot tag duos coming out of each of them with each their own gimmick.
What?
There were the Ripped Boys, the Ripped Up Boys, the boys ripped up cut-off jeans, the boys who got ripped over the summer, Rip Buffman and Cup Buffman, and... Damn Yankees. They all flexed and grunted as they inched their way toward the bear and elf. To be continued,
what?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Whoa.
No. That's right.
That's amazing.
Oh my god.
There's gonna be some tag teaming.
I
shit.
I know what I want to be for Halloween.
What's that?
I'm gonna get a bear costume, and then I'm gonna get like Road Warriors, like something. And I'm gonna get a beer helmet, and then I'm gonna get a ghetto blaster and play DMX. And if anybody asks what I am, I'm gonna kick him in the dick hole.
I think it'll be justified. People will probably salute and applaud that.
Yeah, yeah, man.
Yeah.
I would.
They're gonna fuck it. I won't even need to tell them, suck my dick.
They will know.
They'll know that's what they're supposed yeah. to do.
Thank you guys yet again for listening to another episode of Fantasy Fiction. And thank you, Aubrey, for coming on and sharing an awesome tale.
Amazing. Thanks
for
having me. Amazing, as always.
I am honored to be included in this.
Thank you for being here.
Podcast.
A truly an epic yarn, if I
yes,
may.
Yes.
That's what I was striving for.
If people want to hear more stuff like that, they can go check out this Scald podcast. What episode are you up to on?
I just had episode 27 come out, and it's super fun. It's a serial, so it continues week to week, and it's a lot. It's more serious. It's kind of like a hard, like Robert E. Howard, Michael Moorcock, like Fritz Lieber kind of. Not even Fritz Lieber. It's less jokey than that. Even it's heavy. It's a heavy, aggressive sword and sorcery barbarian tale. I write and record a new one every single week in a single take and put it up. And if you want to read,
that's incredible.
That's crazy.
It's aggressive, and they've gotten longer. They're up to about like 40 minutes now.
Oh wow!
In a single take.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
That's just part of the thing. But yeah, like I'm really proud of it. I think it's really exciting. I know your fans because I interacted with them. Like after the first time I was on your show, I interacted with a lot of your fans, and I think that they would dig what I'm doing on Scald. And if you've already got enough podcasts, here's the thing. Here's what you can do. You can go to Amazon.com. You can search for Scald Volume 1. You can get the first volume ebook for only $2.99. It's the prose version of the first 16 episodes.
That's cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm also releasing
his prose.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I'm very excited.
And they can check that out at scald.podomatic.com.
Correct.
Right?
Or just go to aubreysiderson.com that has Scald as well as some wrestling stuff. Which
and
I
that's S-K-A-L-D.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Aubrey, one of the prompts on this episode was wrestling. And I've said before, expert
hey,
on wrestling.
Thanks, man.
The man who got me back into wrestling. I feel like you showed me why wrestling is really cool. Because I watched during the NWO era, mm-hmm. and I watched the Attitude era, and I really enjoyed it as a kid.
And that stuff is great.
It's fun, but I feel like I have a huge new appreciation for this art. I'll call it an art.
Oh, absolutely.
Everyone should be calling it an art.
Yeah.
That's an appropriate word for it. But I want to say, right now, I think for people who are listening to this show, you like nerdy stuff, you like comics, you like video games, you like movies. If you want to give wrestling a chance, now correct me if I'm wrong, the best way to do that is by checking out NXT.
I think that's great advice, honestly. Like, you touched on it already, but so much of what people like about comic books and fantasy and video games and stuff like that, you can like it about wrestling too. And it's the thing that I like most about wrestling is that it is men trying to hurt each other.
Yeah.
It's like a serious competition, these men trying to hurt each other. But within that that's the concept of wrestling. Within that, there's so many wacky, nerdy things going on with like the gimmicks and the promos and stuff like that. And what's great about NXT is it's WWE's farm league. It's their development mm-hmm. team, and it's all these people trying things out, and they're learning their craft, and they're trying new things. And I'll tell you, it's really fun, and it's really great, and I love it. But the thing that's best about it, and the reason why I agree with you that that's a great place for people to start, it's available on the WWE Network, which is only like $9.99. It's like $10 a month. It's totally worth it.
I think you can watch it on Hulu.
Oh,
still?
Maybe. Yeah. I forgot about that.
But
yeah, like the reason I agree with you so much, like, and I agree with you stridently. I stridently agree with you. Is the fact that it's only an hour, man? Raw is WWE's flagship show. It comes on every Monday for 3 fucking hours.
Yes,
I love wrestling,
long.
And it's too much. It's way too much. NXT is 1 hour. They get in, they get out. They have a few matches. They push some stories ahead. There are a couple promos. It's everything you need from a wrestling show. It's only an hour. It's manageable. It's something that you, as a person starting out, you can watch. You cannot feel lost. You cannot feel overwhelmed. It's just an hour of your week.
And what you'll see in NXT is a lot of, you know, as it is their basically their farm league. You get to see some stuff that typically wouldn't work in WWE, but works really well in NXT.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and part of that is they cater to, and this is going to sound like maybe you shouldn't check it out, but I'll clarify. They cater to a hardcore audience. They cater to a very specific type of wrestling fan. But when I say hardcore audience, I don't mean people who necessarily know a ton about wrestling and they have very specific taste. But it's people who are really, really into these nerdy aspects of wrestling. You know,
yeah.
It doesn't. It. I would have to imagine the NXT audience skews a little bit older than the average Raw audience, which has a lot of kids and stuff, you know? So it's, you know, if I imagine if you're listening to the show, you're probably, you know, late teens, 20s, early 30s. NXT's for you, man.
Yeah.
Like, it is very much geared to people of our age and generation.
I'm looking up Aiden English here and his signature move, the director's cut, and I'm going to say he's my favorite.
Oh, really? I don't like Aiden English. I don't like the vaudevillains. I'll say it right now.
You know, I'll say that the vaudevillains, I like them because it kind of looks like if Josh and I had a baby.
Yeah.
that guy, it's crazy because that guy's in really good shape and he's really tall, but like he always just seems really small to me. Like he really
seems
skinny.
Does seem a little slimmer, but that is a fine body.
He's got traps.
He's got a physique
on
him,
traps,
man. For sure.
I wanted to bring up NXT specifically because I feel like it's at a point right now where years from now we'll be talking about this time of NXT and be like, I'm happy I was watching when it was this time.
I can see that. It's really exciting. It's fun for people who are really, really hardcore fans because they're bringing in a lot of folks from the indies and different promotions in different countries.
Yeah.
They just brought in her name is she wrestled as Kana in Japan and an American promotion where she'd come over and do that. Now she's going Asuka. Is her name in WWE because they want something they can copyright. Mm-hmm. It's a business. Relax.
They're making money.
Yeah. They're trying to. And but they bring in all these other folks. And so it's like folks that you might have heard of that we might have seen at PWG when we've gone there. And, you know, like local wrestling promotions, they're bringing these guys in and they're building off of their success instead of just kind of whitewashing it. Mm-hmm. It's super exciting and it's fun. And I mean, again, the thing that I stress the most is if you like comics or video games or any of this nerdy stuff that I know, I'll speak for the three of us at least, that we're all super into.
Yeah.
Wrestling is kind of for you too. And NXT is a easily digestible way to enjoy. It's a great gateway drug.
The thing that drew me in immediately about NXT was that it was an hour long and that it had promos. Like it was such a tight show. And that's what I like about it so much is that it's so reminiscent of Saturday Night Main Event.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I love that program. But anyway, speaking of NXT, speaking of WWE, I'm going
to
be on.
I'm sorry. I got to shove this in there to agree with you more. Women's stuff.
Oh, yeah.
This is a big thing in the culture and wide, especially in kind of like geek-oriented cultures, whether it's comic books or video games or wrestling. It's about female representation.
Yeah.
And about treating women competitors or artists or creators with the same respect that men get, which they should. And WWE has struggled in this regard. The wrestling industry has struggled in this regard since always. But NXT is ground, and WWE is making great strides, and a ton has changed in the last few months. And there's some really fantastically talented women on the main Raw show, but NXT is kind of ground zero for that change and shift.
Yeah.
And they've been giving a ton of focus to the women's wrestlers in NXT, and they treat them like the men's wrestlers. They're not fighting over boyfriends. They're not just like catty bitches.
Yeah.
Underwear fights. They are serious competitors trying to beat each other, trying to show that they're the best, trying to get the title. And guess what? It's amazing.
It's awesome. Sasha Banks is one of my favorite wrestlers right now.
Yep.
I hear Brunhilde is going to be on NXT.
Yeah. She's got those boots, though. They got to figure out whether those are regulation.
Would you say that wrestling most accurately represents media as a whole?
What?
That's a crazy huge question.
I don't even know what that means.
Would it reflect our values in media?
It reflects my personal values.
Well, especially with this women's thing happening this huge push that's happening, I feel like in the last 2 years, I feel like the NXT has really embraced it, and it really reflects how a lot of people feel.
I think that, to your question, I think that wrestling is kind of a much better bellwether and indicator for pop culture at large than a lot of people would like to admit, because there's still this stigma attached to it. But the fact of the matter is,
like, unless you're talking about, like, I don't know, like NCIS or something, nobody likes, no, there's not anything that more people like than wrestling. Wrestling is huge. Wrestling is massive, and it's not always sexy for, like, certain outlets to talk about. So we sometimes, like, have this misguided perception that, like, oh, like, True Detective is somehow more influential, or Game of Thrones is like a bigger deal than wrestling.
Yeah.
And guess what? It's not. It's that's demonstrably false if you look at the actual numbers of people who watch this stuff.
Yeah. And, well, wrestling has always been huge, and it will always be huge because it's that.
Tits.
It's awesome. And I think Josh and I talked about this about the NFL last week on our General Banter show about how it's kind of hard to watch now because of all of the injuries and stuff. Yeah, all that kind of stuff. What's great about wrestling is that you get that high impact kind of like you're watching two strong men or women beat each other up.
Right.
But what's so cool about it is that it's the illusion that we figured out a way to do this without severely damaging
bodies.
That's
an old Bret Hart thing he talks about in his book. He says that, you know, the whole idea behind wrestling is to do stuff that looks like it hurts but doesn't.
It's a magic trick. And, like, who doesn't like a good magic trick, but also a magic trick that involves punching people?
Dude, the other way that wrestling's a lot like magic, too, is that it's a con. And, like, any good con, the mark needs to be complicit.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? You got to buy in.
If you're a magician, you need the audience to want to believe that you can do magic. Same with wrestling. You need the audience to want to get lost in that suspension of disbelief. I'll say something else, too. I mean, wrestling is not super safe. Like, it's like, it's not like the cliche line is it ain't ballet. You know, it's not.
Right.
And people can get seriously, seriously hurt, and they do get seriously, seriously hurt. But something you can say about WWE that's been really great is that, you know, all the mistakes that they've made in the past, they have been on top of the concussion thing in the wake of the Chris Benoit incident, I don't know what to call it, the murder-suicide Chris Benoit incident. They have been so on top of concussions, and if anybody gets any kind of concussion, they are done until they pass impact testing.
Right.
This didn't used to be a thing. This didn't used to be a thing in wrestling. It didn't used to be a thing in football.
In sports, yeah.
They would just send you home and be like, you're good.
Well, they just didn't know. They just didn't know the long-term effects of it. This is getting really real, by the way, on Fantasy Fiction.
Well, we got real last time, so it's fine. It's fine. This is not as real. Okay. We got real, and then we were like, man, we don't know what to do.
We got to talk about the environment.
Yeah, well, it's specifically about concussions.
Yeah. Jesus. And the thing is, you know, people can get concussions, but there are guys who've had – a guy right now, he's the commentator on NXT, Corey Graves. That guy's a really talented wrestler, and he was really figuring out who he was going to be in WWE. He's a fantastic heel. He got a concussion. It was like – I don't know. I'm guessing, but like his sixth or seventh concussion anymore.
Uh-huh.
And they said – you can't
throughout career, not
oh, for his career, for his career, on the indies doing different stuff. And they said, guess what? You can't compete anymore.
Yeah,
it's just not safe. Like, we cannot allow you to do this because it's just you'll risk brain damage. And so now he's behind commentary, and they've kept him around, and he's fantastic.
He is the best heel commentator.
If you're an old wrestling fan, he is like the second coming of Jesse Ventura.
Yeah, that's what I see as him, because he talks real, and like sometimes he doesn't admit that he's wrong, but he changes his views. But it's always in the favor of the heel, which is what I love. But hey, if you guys like this wrestling talk, we're going to be talking more wrestling on This Week in Wrestling, of the two shows you do on the Straight Shoot channel.
I do. So Straight Shoot is it used to be primarily exclusively a post show type thing on Raw and pay per views, and we've kind of been transitioning over to the This Week in Wrestling format, which has become becoming our flag. We're in the process of transition. That's becoming the flagship. And the exciting thing about that is while we used to just talk about like a single episode of Raw or a pay-per-view, now we talk about everything. So it's a panel discussion. Dom's going to be joining us this week, October 8th, to talk about – or no, I'm sorry. That's next week.
Next week, yes.
Next week, October 8th. Dom's going to be responsible for talking about all that WWE and NXT stuff. And I don't know exactly because it's in advance and I got to figure out what's hot and what's worth talking about. But we always talk about two other things as well. Sometimes it's indie promotions like Ring of Honor, PWG, or Evolve, or Dragon's Gate. Other times it's international promotions like New Japan Pro Wrestling. And sometimes we talk about retro stuff. We pick something that's available on the WWE Network. This past week we did WrestleMania 12 and it was super fun.
Oh, now, that's awesome.
Was that the one that Shawn Michaels came in ziplining?
Yeah, he ziplined in, and it was amazing. Dude, that guy ziplined into his theme music that he sings that goes, I'm just a sexy boy. I'm just a sexy boy. He ziplined in, and then he wrestled an hour-long Iron Man match with Bret Hart that ended in a tie.
Yeah.
And then Roddy Piper, who was the president of WWE at that time, and had just beaten the shit out of Goldust over the course of the night.
Oh, my God. We bought that pay-per-view.
With footage. They used, like, so they chased each other on the highway, and they used footage from the OJ chase.
Yeah.
It was absurd.
It was ridiculous.
So he beat up Goldust, and then he came out as, you know, he made the executive decision as the president of WWE that they had to restart the match to definitely have a winner because it was for the title. It was dope.
That's great. That's
incredible. And that's WrestleMania 12.
Yeah. So yeah, fucking go to straightshoot.com for links to everything. YouTube.com/C/straightshoot. Straightshoot.podomatic. Search for Straight Shoot on iTunes, Stitcher. It's all there.
And when you're listening to this bad boy on a YouTube, go ahead and enable those annotations because you can get clicks. You can click your way right to these pages.
Just click
on
it.
Annotations.
Well, hey, I have one last thing. One last thing I want to talk about because I know I'm talking to two fans.
Uh-huh.
I saw for the first time The Matrix.
What?
What?
Yeah.
Really? How is that possible?
Have you seen The Matrix?
I saw it when I was younger. I saw like half of it and I was like, oh, this is pretty neat.
It's great.
But I saw it as an adult and I just never got around to it. It was just,
That was a seminal media experience for me. That is crucial to my development as a consumer.
I was blown away. Like rightfully so. It's an incredible movie.
Yeah.
I love that movie now.
Have you seen this? Have you seen the second one?
I haven't seen any of the others.
Dude,
yeah.
The second one is fuck everybody. It's great. The second one is awesome.
Aubrey,
Josh,
I agree with you. And
yeah,
I'm so
of
glad
you do.
I'm serious. I'm so glad that you said that because the second one is such like a great universe building movie, and nobody gives it credit for that. Like everyone's
also,
like,
I don't want to spoil anything.
Doesn't have enough fucking rage songs in it, or whatever the fuck.
I don't want to spoil anything for Dom because you need to see it. But there are some fight scenes in there that are phenomenal, and they blow away anything in the first movie.
Yeah, there's some
and
great
is,
things.
I would, to this day, I would if on one channel they had the first Matrix and the other one
pick
they
the second
had,
one.
The second one, I would pick the second one.
Agreed.
Really?
Every single time.
I agree.
The third one is not a good movie.
No, third one's not good.
however, it's not as bad as people say it is, and there's also some really neat redeeming stuff in the third one.
Yeah, it's just the end of the second movie, really, is what the third movie is.
Yeah.
Well, I know you like Jupiter Ascending.
Oh, I love Jupiter Ascending.
I love Jupiter Ascending. I liked it so much. I talked about it on Continue Quest, which is another show that we do, and we got so many comments that where people were like, that movie sucked. Do not tell people to watch that movie.
Listen, I think those people 201 are assholes. and they're the and they're the same assholes who run around talking about like, oh, Hollywood and regurgitate ideas. I can't believe they're making a movie about Ouija boards. Oh, Jupiter Ascending? Fuck that. It's confusing and weird.
Right.
I gotta go get in line now for Star Wars 8.
Yep.
They're the fucking problem. Because fucking Jupiter Ascending was new and innovative and exciting, and it was like a totally new, different take on the sci-fi action movie.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Stuff you do not see in a budget of that scale either. And some beautiful shots, awesome action sequences.
Awesome world building.
I've sung its praises on this show.
Also, lots of subtlety. Josh, have you seen it?
I have not seen it.
I don't want to spoil it for you either. See it, man.
You got to check it out. There's parts that are not good, but most of the film is really great.
Dude, the worst thing the Wachowskis have ever directed is that third Matrix movie, and even that's not as bad as people say it is. Fucking Speed Racer, amazing.
Yes.
Did you watch Sense8?
Yeah,
it gets to a point.
Well, I'm sorry. The best thing that they've – I'm sorry. The only bad thing they've written – the worst thing they've written is because okay, so they produced Sense8.
Well, no, they wrote and directed Sense8.
I thought Michael Straczynski wrote it.
Well, I think they wrote it. I think they both got credits.
Oh, okay.
But it's good. I like Sense8.
I couldn't get into it. I only made like 4 or 5 episodes in.
It's a pretty awesome concept though, but it's in line with those other concepts of like collective conscious and such. It's pretty cool. But you should see Jupiter Ascending.
Everybody should see Jupiter Ascending.
But yeah. But hey, that's all we got. Josh, you got anything you want to talk about before we go?
I'm just glad that Aubrey was here. I missed him, and I love when he's on,
Josh.
And the story was great. And thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me, boys. This is super fun.
Yeah, thanks so much
always,
for coming.
I'm honored. I'm honored to come back to Fantasy Fiction.
The honor is all ours, sir.
He brought the thunder.
He did.
He brought the lightning. He brought the rain.
He brought all of it.
Clickety-clack. Fucking call me Thor, boys. From here on out.
October 8th, guys, going to be talking about some wrestling on This Week in Wrestling on the Straight Shoot channel. YouTube.com/C/straight shoot.
It's confusing. Don't ask.
We'll get an annotation on there for you if you're watching on YouTube. And guys, until next week.
Until next week, everybody. Aubrey should do it.
Keep on
wizarding out!
Keep on wizarding, everybody.
Beautiful.
Josh, tell them what to do.
Keep on wizarding!
Keep on wizarding, everybody. Keep check out the Scald podcast. Skull. Check out Straight Shoot. Straight we'll talk shoot. Soon. We'll talk to you real
Find
soon.
Find me on
guys.
Twitter at Aubrey Sitterson.
At
it.
Aubrey Sitterson.
Ow! Ow!
We'll probably retweet him, so you'll see.
All right!
Bye-bye.
Bye.